Oh, okay, sorry.
Of course, I can't remember anything without my slides.
Do you need sound?
I do. I do have sound. So I'm going to report the quantitative part of the experience that we have been doing. Last time when we met, I reported a pilot experiment where we had only six local subjects. And this experiment is a large-scale one based on that experiment. I'm going to explain the test design and the results, and then I'll shortly discuss the direction that perhaps the analysis could go. Oh my goodness. This didn't used to look like this before, I'm really sorry. Anyway, we are focusing on effort. Because it's something that can be seen and heard. Effort is also something that's probably related to the arousal that is often measured, and hopefully not related to valence to the happy-sad axis. And we wanted to focus on the perception of a music performance, not how aroused the subject could be. A further reason for choosing effort as a measurement was the work of Rudolf Laban, who thought effort as the basis of all movement. And we were hoping that in the next step of the analysis we could find some inspiration from these theoretical thoughts about movements. So the main questions in our experiment were how similar the audio only, the effort ratings based on audio only or video only would be. In the pilot experiments they were very similar, and I was somewhat worried about that. I thought that could possibly be some sort of systematic error source, that the six subjects from ICST had seen the material so many times that it could be contaminated. So this time each subject only saw the material once. And we also added the audiovisual condition in the large-scale experiment. It was of interest which one of these ratings would dominate. So if we compare the audio, the video, and the audiovisual results, does audio or video somehow come closer to the actual rating? And then what might be the contributing factors behind the ratings? We chose a continuous response rating. It was a mapping from the finger pressing to the perceived effort that the subjects believed that there was in the music performance. We had 5 stimuli, 5 observation intervals, plus 1 for training always. The duration was 20 to 40 seconds. 3 between subjects conditions. There was the audio only condition, the video only, and the audio visual condition. And the segments were presented in randomized order. This time we had 14 subjects in each of these 3 groups, that totals up to 42. Half of them were musicians, and also the non-musicians were practically all students of ZHDK, which means that they would be practically between 20 and 30 years of age. So the task was to rate the perceived effort in a music performance using the touch box. And at the beginning, I explained the meaning of effort in English and in German as well as I could, as physical or mental power, endeavor, stress, strive, energy. And none of these explanations of effort had anything to do with audio or video in itself, because effort is also a concept. As training, each subject would have to play with the interface a little while. The whole pressing force range was divided into 5 effort categories: very high effort, medium, low, and very low effort. And then they would have to follow a ball on the scale to reach that that certain level with their finger pressing force. And after one training segment that was rated in a normal way, the five observational, the measurement segments began. And all of this took 15 up to 20 minutes at most. You already saw bits of the Pression solo cello piece. Here's a picture of the actual situation for the subjects. They were seated by a laptop in a quiet room, giving their ratings by the touch box, which we use quite a lot at Zetar de Caso. The benefit is that we know the behavior of this box pretty well. If we need to refer to technical details, then we can find out. All these measurements result in non-stationary and dependent time series at 100 Hz sampling rate at first. So that was the raw data. What I then did was downsample to 10 Hz in order to reduce the serial correlation that's typically there in this kind of data. And then I used half a second splines to smooth each profile. And then I also did some mean centering within each segment, and this is what typically came out. This seems to be segment 4. Audio only results for 14 subjects. We can see that there is quite a lot of variance between subjects. This is very typical in this kind of experiments. The subjects rarely agree very much. However, there is indeed a common profile in many of the cases. Let's look at the video results for the very same segments. There's a similar kind of profile, also quite a high variance. Audiovisual, same thing, even perhaps more variance than possible, in the audio or video segments. I'm not going to show all the segments, but this is indeed quite a typical result. Before we can go anywhere, we should perhaps try to make something of the variance between subjects, their degree of agreement. And what I've done is compute a longitudinal standard deviation. Audio is red, video is blue, and black is the audiovisual condition. So typically in this segment, the vertical standard deviation is on the level of 0.1. And since the whole rating scale was from 0 to 1, and it was divided in 5 categories, so each category would be about 0.2, it means that a standard deviation is about half a gesture category. What would be defined as an outlier would then be a couple of standard deviations away from this. So if somebody presses a whole effort category less or more than the mean, that could then already be quite far from the data. Still, the variance is reasonably high. There's not much way to get around that. So now we can look at the variance between each segment and between one group, for instance, the audio group or the video group. Then the next very interesting thing is to compare groups, for instance, the video group against the audio group. When could their ratings be statistically significantly different or not? And I've done this by computing functional or longitudinal F-tests, which is simply a statistical test to decide whether two groups could have the same mean or not. So whenever this number is smaller than 0.05, we could conclude that there is a difference between the ratings of the video group and the audio group. And this is what you're going to see in these panels. I'm presenting the mean results for each segment. In the left panel, you can see in red the mean audio ratings, in blue the mean video ratings, in black the audiovisual ratings. And in the rightmost panel, if you want to observe also when the difference would be statistically significant. In this case, the video and the audio ratings would be reliably different from each other until this point. Then there's a little bump where they come close together. And we could hear what's going on. That was it. There's hardly anything going on in the audio in this segment, but just a little squeak. And we can see that it's reflected in the audio ratings, also in the audiovisual ones, but not really in the visual ones. In the next segment, this is interesting because the audio and the video ratings are actually never significantly different. We get the same measurement from both groups as well as the audiovisual group. So even though the timbre is very special in this sample, it's very gestural though. So basically what you see is what you hear, pretty much. And this is also reflected in the results. Then comes my favorite one. Now here's a lot of muscle tension involved, and it would be interesting to see or try to find out why it doesn't really reflect in the video ratings. The audio ratings are obviously higher this time because it was quite loud and quite tense sounding. In the crossing point, the groups are similar though, but there's the difference is there. Also in this segment, the audio and video and audiovisual results were very close to each other. There was no significant difference at all. Also, the material is very gestural. And then the last one. Are higher as well as the audiovisual ones, and there's a difference most of the time, but here when the audio gets softer, suddenly the ratings approach each other. So this is kind of a very rough idea of when the ratings in the different conditions could be similar. And it wasn't very helpful based on this to find isolated areas of interest where something really interesting would be happening. And the next thing I tried was to find areas of high agreement or areas of minimal agreement within the segments. And this was done by simply adding up the number of subjects who were going up in their ratings at a certain moment of time, versus the number of subjects who were going down in their ratings. So if all subjects happen to be going up, they must agree that something more effortful is going on. And if half of them is going up, half of them is going down, it must mean that there's a disagreement about what's happening. Perhaps other people look at the video, other people look at the audio, and so forth. So this brings us to time-varying consonance profiles, so to speak. When this number peaks somewhere, it means that all the subjects are behaving the same way. They are going up if we are in the positive scale, and they are then going down if we are very negative. And at the zero, people basically disagree. From these profiles, we may isolate interesting gestures or interesting regions of a few seconds. For instance, typically 2 to 4 such places in each segment. For instance, in this first segment, we have a place where most of the subjects, all the subjects, agree in the audio condition going up, as well as the audiovisual condition. However, in the video condition, there's maximal disagreement. So I've called these kind of things auditory effort events. We may want to find some other kind of events as well. For instance, at the end of this segment, there's a moment in time where most of the subjects are going up in the video condition as well as the audio visual, but the audio condition is in total disagreement. So this is something that is probably caused by something in the video track that causes the agreement. We could call that perhaps a visual effort event. Finding these kind of places is interesting. We are going to join forces with Patrick also to look at his data for these few second small gestures, if we find similarities there. There's one more auditory event. I'm not going to go through all these, but typically there are a few such moments in each segment that are very interesting. Then, looking at the difference between musicians and non-musicians, I definitely did not expect to see a difference. However, there was one. The musicians in the audio conditions always pressed harder than non-musicians. And the non-musicians in the video condition always pressed harder than the musicians. So that the musicians somehow emphasized the audio part. And this went on throughout all 5 segments, as we can see. For instance, if you look at the solid lines, they are always musicians of
red one is for all.
Almost one effort category between musicians and non-musicians. In this segment, the difference for the video bit is a bit smaller, but however, we can see that the musicians press less in the video group than non-musicians. Same thing happening here, solid line audio harder than the non-musicians, and so on. And in all these segments, the differences are statistically significant. And now, to find some contributing factors which might explain the results. Obviously, there is some sort of baseline perception of effort that is pretty simple. And there seems to be a correlation to the moving average of the sound pressure level. So we seem to be thinking to 1 or 2 seconds of the past things that have happened. And this shows exactly that. Red is, again, the ratings in the audio condition, and the dashed line gives a moving average of the sound pressure level, of the loudness, probably. And we see that even though we don't always reflect everything in such big differences, the basic form is there. This is not a new result. I've seen something like this for arousal. But at least this seems to be one very important factor. To summarize the results, effort seems to be a meaningful measure for how we perceive a musical performance. It probably has something in common with arousal. What exactly, we don't know, because arousal has not been studied as a multimodal or an audiovisual measure that much. And also the effort measurement is just one experiment so far. However, there seems to be a baseline perception, as I showed the moving average to the sound pressure level in the audio condition. Probably in the video condition something similar would be going on. I've been looking at the motion capture data, and probably I should be able to put together some sort of measure from that. What remains is to decide whether it's the audio or the video track that decides more of our joint perception in the audiovisual. It is not obvious from the data which one dominates. So basically, what I would like to suggest to do next for myself is to use these baseline perception measurements and then isolate the interesting moments based on the agreement profiles, and also based on Patrick's data on very, very short segments. And then to feed these into a machine learning system. So what we have at the end would be the baseline plus the effect of such gestures. This would be kind of a gesture-based or object-oriented analysis. Which would not be a regression analysis over a whole time segment in itself. And we'll see how far we get, because the project is coming to an end, but there's a lot of data available for us now, and I'm going to be looking at it more and more closely. That's it.
Okay. Thanks, Hanna. So a lot more data now. And what I find really interesting in a way is, I mean, what you haven't mentioned is that this large experiment is like the fifth iteration or something, right?
The sixth
iteration. So those of you who've been here before in the meetings, we've already shown this in smaller contexts. So now this has been kind of consolidated in a way. Right?
Yeah.
And because, I mean, when we look at just what you present, the question, of course, comes to the maybe what Atta was asking, what is the experimental design? What were the premises? You know, how did you come to decide that this was the thing to look at?
Well, it's a big question, how come we should measure something like effort? Yeah. We could have measured arousal. But at that time, there was this Laban thing in the air, and somehow we just all agreed that effort might be something interesting to look into. And I still think it's interesting. If it comes back together with arousal, if it turns out it means basically the same thing, just a perceived thing and not an experienced thing, I have nothing against that. Arousal also needs more research into it as an audiovisual or multimodal perception.
Where is it usually used, arousal?
It's used in an emotional, when we measure our emotional,
yeah.
Emotional, I'm looking for the
states.
Word. Yeah.
So affect spaces.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
So what you usually use is arousal and this then balance,
yeah.
Happy, sad. And these two seem to take care of most material. But with this repertoire, we do not want to consider it happy or sad for out of artistic reasons. So that leaves us with something.
Yeah.
And this movement analysis was the original reason why we chose effort and not arousal.
Yeah. So what I would be really curious is now how your work and your work link together. And you haven't really seen kind of the comparative analysis of the two. And I don't know what your thoughts are on that, how you would merge these two kind of.
Yeah. Well, if we're lucky, then we find from this data the large segments. Once I've isolated statistically places of interest, I'm sure it turns out that there's something in common with Patrick's material.
Okay.
So then we may analyze the effect of surprise for musicians, non-musicians, in this 4-second segment.
It's actually the one link I did just before in the segment one. There's a difference in surprise, so musician or less surprised. You just showed it for all segments, so it kind of works for just one segment, but the overall trend is not there.
Yeah.
But that's at least one point. The other thing is, as you just said before, a good thing would be with this continuous data to identify the segments we just selected by raters, so to speak,
yeah,
by us. That would be a great thing.
So kind of inverse the method, exactly, of having the entire performance and then use the system to isolate those moments that are gesturally important. Is that,
yes,
what you mean? Because now we've actually, as humans, have selected a certain
segment. That's what I said with the selection bias. Yes.
Okay.
That would work around it, but give other methodological problems then, I think. Because you then make an analysis and then you take the same people with some time in between. So you have a problem there. To select the short segments from her data would then, I think, disrupt the whole experiment as it is at the moment.
Yeah, I don't quite see how this could be achieved properly, but I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
What I also find interesting is that at the back end of Patrick's work was the whole kind of terminology development.
Yeah.
So the work that we did in the very beginning of like going through the literature and finding all the gesture categories and really finding out which kind of categorizations we could use. So the map that we showed last year, and I think, I don't know what you'll be talking about this, but this is kind of the background to these questions, right? And effort is somehow already a distillation from that, I think. Or do I see this from my bias?
We all have our own bias. Yeah, why not?
So to me, the difficult aspect now, if we look at the whole project, is how, I mean, I see how your two tasks or activities correlate, but how it correlates to the other activities, to me, is less clear. What I want to mention is that we now also have a motion capture recording of the trombone piece. So actually we need experiment 7.
Which we actually already did, but something didn't quite.
Yeah. Well, so experiment 7 would mean redo the whole method, but now with the trombone piece, right? Which would in a way link into the core activities of the other strands. What I find interesting to observe is that the different processes take different time. Just amount of time to. I don't know how long you spent getting these 45 subjects to do the test. I mean, that's been a month of work, right?
Yes, it was a big experiment. If we are going to do the trombone piece, it would be interesting because that has been composed in these kind of contradictory things in mind. Sometimes there's only movement, very little sound, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So that would perhaps give us material to decide which one dominates in which situation.
Okay.
And then for my part, conclusions from this project, which has to do with gesture, would really be this kind of way of measuring effort or arousal, whatever we want to call it, in this kind of gesture-oriented way. Instead of monitoring, let's say, 30 aspects of an audiovisual signal at all times, we could just skip what's not interesting and then find gestures that add to the baseline. If ever we need to do that in real time or for some sort of artistic project, then that might be a way to save a lot of computation.
So this is kind of a higher order feature in a way.
Yeah, kind of a MPEG-3 of effort.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure that you would find out that arousal or effort would be the same.
Probably not.
Because right. I think, and that's something very interesting in this study, when you come to the notion of effort, it's much more, I would say, sensorial, physical, and so physiological.
Yes.
So you ask people to judge on that level. When you come to arousal, I think it's people will much more go to how it impacts on them. So I think that is just—I think that it's very interesting, also on a psychological level. It would be interesting to redo the experiment and ask people what would be the level of arousal. But I'm not sure.
Or measure their heart rate or blood pressure.
Yeah. Because I'm not sure at all, and I think that even then. And that is somewhere that is also the question with the difference between musicians and non-musicians. A musician somewhere knows that something sounds maybe very effortful, but knows that it's not effortful.
Yeah.
And that is also something which is...
This I experienced I'm a singer outside ICST, and when we had Donatienne doing her piece, there were some places where she must have been out of breath. And I knew how effortful it must be for her to continue. So that was for me a kind of a moment when I realized this thing. But you're quite right. I also don't think that effort and arousal will be the same thing. But the fact that both the video-only and the audio-only conditions were rated so similarly, then people must somehow appreciate the amount of effort that they perceive in a music performance, even though probably then if we measure their blood pressure or some sort of physical measure, they would be very different from
the
video and audio.
Yeah, the question is if they rate it in a similar sense, if there is not an effect of synesthesia.
Also.
So then you are on the multisensorial. And I think that is probably also an important element. Why it's measured the same. I had an older small remark in one of the segments, Patrick, that you discuss.
Mm-hmm.
You mark on one of the your pages.
Mm-hmm.
It is the most surprising segment, and then in that row there is most surprising, and further on it's familiar. For me, after a lot of studies in this, normally these are opposites.
Yes, it certainly is. Yeah. So you have to look at who's behind these ratings actually. So it was also a little bit showed it as an outcome, or it was my point about the selection bias. So maybe this was so strong related to others that you also have this differentiating ratings, so in one direction, as you say, surprising, but also so yeah, just scored high in everything, which is not good, actually. But another point about arousal and effort, I think it's neurologically also, there are other systems involved. Effort is like perceived and I think processed through the mirror neurons or the imitation processes in our brain, whereas arousal is, as you said, like a reaction, like a personal reaction to it. So they may be working on these different levels.
Yeah, they might. There's unfortunately no way that we can at this point study that enough to find out the difference between effort and arousal. But
in perception, I mean,
yeah,
I think that's the other thing.
There's no research into that.
Yeah. Because I mean, in a way, what is interesting to me as a performer is that I can always kind of switch the perspective. So I'm on the scale of like expertise, I'm on one end, and that also means that if I have a visual cue, I can still reconstruct what you were saying about the singer that you observe. And so, in that sense, I mean, to me, gesturality. I mean, the whole research on gesture, of course, has a semantic aspect, but also has a physiological or kind of a kinesthetic aspect of. And I think that's where this links in, is that it's almost pre-personal, so it's not really interpretative, but more like a reaction, right? And in that sense, of course, we can ask ourselves, how does that link to the question of gesturality? Because gesturality implies some semantic, some meaning, some signification, some signs, and effort in a way is below that. So I find that quite interesting. And
yes, there is some measure of arousal, because when people say it's the most surprising, I think that it's more arousal than effort.
Mm, probably.
So it is strange that the people use more arousal-like terminology when they describe some of these segments.
Yeah, maybe.
So, in the qualitative sense, when you say something, I just think about the book of David Huron about David Huron about
anticipation.
Yeah.
Yeah, sweet anticipation.
Yeah.
Mm. So that music has is in a lot of ways is all about anticipating what comes next and knowing what comes next. So, and I think in that sense, yeah, arousal
is
also a physiological reaction to the unknown.
Yeah.
So it's an affect reaction.
A little remark: if you are planning to do the trombone piece, I have an interesting perception about that, because doing it was. For me, a lot of effort. You will see this in the beginning, it happens nothing, nearly. And when I watch the video, this is the question between a live performance and video performance for use for to get data about this. I always was unsure when I watch the video, does this work? Does this work? When I watch the video, I can't come into, perhaps because my action is three-dimensional orientated a lot, but for that specific piece I'm not sure if it works on video, especially the first part.
So this is the new section we have in the piece, that's something to watch out for tonight.
Yeah,
the beginning of the trombone piece.
Mm-hmm.
And try to think of whether that works on video, and I think it loses like 80% of its effect on video.
Is this something we didn't see yet?
You saw it.
I think it's in September, you saw the beginning, which was really kind of a tension. A little bit like what Alexander would have with the standing still and the minimal movements. It's part of what I'm interested in is like presence, physical presence. How is that constituted?
Mm-hmm.
And that has to do with kind of bodily attitudes as well. And not just kind of activity. So this is a very good remark, because that relates to kind of how important it would be to have these measures in real time.
But does the mirror neurons work on video or not?
The digital mirror neurons.
They do.
I had a question about this, as you mentioned that the you found a correlation between the effort and the audio RMS.
Yeah.
Which I guess makes sense in one way, but did you also correlate with emotion? Like, for example,
not
quantity of motion.
That's what I should
because
be now
I guess,
doing next.
And even the combination of something like quantity of motion and audio RMS, because then you only really get the objective measure.
I think mostly they also cross-correlate. The video ratings correlate with audio attributes and vice versa. For the pilot, I did something. I just So that the on average loud segments were also rated high in the video and so on, so forth. But because if there's lots of sound, there's usually movement.
Yeah, I think it depends on the playing technique. Mm. I mean, in pression you have some aspects that don't sound at all and you have a lot of movement. And vice versa, and I mean, and in the trombone piece, I mean, the sound actually is generated with the air column and the lips, so you might not have a lot of visible movement, especially the kinematic, you know, the movement in space type. And that's why I think we're also a bit physiological data would be interesting, kind of to counterbalance that.
I think it has a lot to do with the kinesthetic experience that you have, that you take with, if you talk about effort.
Yeah.
It's like a person who doesn't know how to play the cello will maybe even visually realize physically what that could be, but a person who only listens to it and doesn't know how that instrument plays cannot relate physically to it, I think.
Yeah, there's probably an embodied perception of the performance effort.
I think if you talk about effort very much so.
And then, what I saw is that there's this identification that goes on in perception. Always, we want to identify how something is made, and if we can't, then it's substituted for something else. So, if you don't know how a sound is produced, you will substitute it for something you know, and then you project the effort of that substituted one. And in very rare cases, you don't identify, and then you get an error. So that's kind of a perceptual process, which I've been investigating kind of a motor imagery that works that way. Ottavio.
Yeah, so I was very interested in your agreement curve as a way to try to make sense of the data and reconcile the different subjects. And then I remembered seeing the first slide of all the different curves, and you're saying, well, all the subjects were different. And so when you do the agreement curves, there's a one kind of assumption that everyone's synchronized,
yes. Right?
But what I think I saw at the very beginning of your talk, when we saw all the subjects, all the wildly different curves, were actually sometimes they were maybe similar but offset in time, so that they were reacting. Some maybe were reacting right at the moment it was happening.
Yes.
Some maybe had more latency in their own response, and your agreement curve would actually lose that information. No?
It would peak very momentarily at the in the middle of the movement area. Of course, that's why the peaks were so narrow. But this is of course what happens to any data. We have seen different kinds of delays with which we react to things. And the next step in cleaning up the raw measurement data would be to register them, but it's really difficult in this kind of material. We can't anchor really into anything.
And then the second thought that I had is when you're talking about RMS or maybe the movement. In fact, it reminds me actually of this, the sound tracing experiments where people follow the morphology of sound they're listening to and being asked to make a gesture. Is there a question of ground truth then? If we're talking about effort and you're measuring perceived effort with the pressure sensor, on the subject, we don't have anything in the stimulus that's saying how much effort the musician really put in.
No.
Right? So,
and
maybe
the
Laban
right
motion analysis, movement analysis is useful for this. In fact, could you do an LMA analysis, an objective LMA specialist analysis of the performance by watching the video or by getting the motion capture data, calculating the quantity of movement or the quality of movement, and to try to have some sort of ground truth anchors in the stimulus to measure against, is then you have this sort of thing that you are supposedly projecting and then the thing that may be perceived by the subject.
We could do this in a limited scale, perhaps not for the whole material, maybe for a short segment.
Well, I think the issue here is that you're not seeing a kind of a reduced, specially kind of filtered version of it, but you're seeing a full performance, which I think contains too much information in some ways. Mm-hmm. because it actually is meaningful in all possible ways that a performance can be. And that's usually with experimental design, you try to kind of eliminate all of these multiplicities and get to one. So even doing kind of from the measured data, doing an analysis, I'm not sure that you get the ground truth. You would get a kind of a reference, a kind of a baseline thing.
I mean, it's already very complex that you're using a piece of Lachenman as stimulus.
Yeah, exactly.
And then,
but could you get the ground truth if the performer herself does the rating also? Then her rating.
Yes, the performer. Yes. This is interesting what you suggest for the trombone. It took you effort to do this, to capture this of the performer somehow, either qualitatively in his description or quantitatively by physiological or motion capture, whatever means, and then to match this against the audience perceived effort.
Yeah.
And then at that point, maybe then you have just something, you mentioned machine learning at the end, but I assume you were talking about some kind of supervised learning. But if you have this, some kind of, whether it's a ground truth or the performer's belief of effort and the measurement of perceived effort that's different among all subjects, and you can't, everyone reacts differently. Maybe that's something you can just throw into an unsupervised learning algorithm to say, they're all watching the same thing. You know, of course we all react differently, but maybe there are some sense that an unsupervised algorithm can make out of it, clustering.
That
we don't see ourselves, and that we can't try to unpick through all these agreements or curves or whatever. Mm.
That's maybe one grand perspective that we have in kind of having the multimodal analysis going on. So that we have first of all the measurements, but then we also bring in these qualitative aspects, so the observer data, and throw that into the mix. Mm. And I don't know how exactly that would work, but I think those correlations, because I think what I mean, there's not one kind of clear answer to the question we're posing, but my hunch is that it's actually represented in the relationship between the things and not in the things themselves, or in the data or in the opinions or in the reactions. It's in how they relate to each other. That's where we might find interesting moments that are kind of stand out. And in a way, that's what I hear as a kind of undertone from you, that there are surprising moments in the analysis where it's like, what does this, or where does this come from?
Yeah, exactly.
So, in that sense, that's the experiment in the sense of not knowing where the interesting findings will pop up. Well, I'm very curious to see how you two blend together in terms of comparing or making a comparative analysis. And I'm also very interested in experiment 7, if we ever get to that.
Yeah.
But I mean, let's see that we can do this.
We should manage that.
Yeah.